Yahoo Sports. This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. This is the FC Yahoo Podcast. With your host, Joe Longo.
Still getting used to that intro, but I like it. This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. We're live on Facebook Live right now on our FC Yahoo FB page. Please check that out if you have time. I'm Joe Lago, editor of the FC Yahoo blog, and joining me in the Playa Vista podcasting room is Joey Galino.
That's new producer Joey Galino to all of you.
Is it interim producer since...
It's really up to you. I feel like I'm going to come back and I won't have a job.
We'll see.
Maybe
we'll see.
A game of FIFA 17. How about that?
Oh, you're done.
Oh, no. Yeah, I probably am done.
You have no chance.
There's no way I'm going to win that.
Alex Baker?
I want to see you grow a Rick Rubin-esque beard to really assume the producer role for this.
You want me to act like Rick Rubin and make you speak into your microphone then, too?
Yeah.
That would be also...
Let's try this again. Let's try it with the mic this time.
I want a Rick Rubin-esque
beard. Is that how you usually
beard.
Play in your band?
Yeah. Well, they usually turn my mic off, so it doesn't really matter.
No, he's being modest.
Shahan Ahmed, the one and only.
Well... A former producer, Shahan Ahmed, apparently, because I'm going to Europe for 6 weeks to cover a bunch of football or soccer.
Humble brag.
We're all jealous.
I'm pretty jealous.
I'm jealous.
But we're going to begin with the events in Dortmund, where three bombs exploded near the Borussia Dortmund bus as it left the team hotel on Tuesday. Luckily, only one player, defender Mark Bartra, was injured when he had wrist surgery. And the game was postponed and played in an early start Wednesday, with Monaco winning 3-2 on Kylian Mbappe's brace and an own goal by Sven Bender. Now, Dortmund coach Thomas Tuchel was highly critical of UEFA's decision to play this game so soon, a day after the bombings. And guys, let's start there with this question. Should the Dortmund-Monaco first leg have been played so soon?
I was consistently just shocked by the fact that this was played this morning. And I guess what I'm trying to say is when I watched the game and you look at the goals that were scored, it just Dortmund didn't look like they were into the match. And that's not questioning their effort, but it kind of felt to me like they were a little lost. And the whole time I was thinking to myself, how in the world would I be able to get out of bed if I was literally the target of a terror attack 24 hours prior, let alone play one of the biggest soccer matches of my life? And the way that the goals were scored, it just kind of showed that to me, because the Bender own goal you talked about, they seemed like they were a foot behind the pace, if you will, the entire first half. And eventually they settled into the match, but I, for the life of me, have no idea why this game was played. There had to be a way for them to kind of shift the schedule around and do something to stop this, because it was completely inappropriate.
Yeah, you know, it's just we're in such uncharted territory that I can't fault UEFA completely, but you have to ask yourself, in any other profession in the world, if you were the victim of a terrorist bombing, would you have to go to work the next day? And you hear some of the terrifying reports of the fact that a piece of shrapnel stuck the headrest of one of the seats. I mean, this could have been a lot worse. I know you were talking about some of the things Tuchel said, but some of the things I've seen from the players, Neri Sahin was recalling the incident, and he says he gets goosebumps, in quote, when you were in the bus last night, I can't forget the faces. Here's one from Socrates, defender. UEFA have to understand we are not animals. We are people that have families and children back home. But you start to see stuff like that into account, and it seems pretty insensitive that the game was played. But again, I don't quite know what else UEFA is. It's just because
we're
in
new
territory.
Well, that's the thing, like the logistics.
Right.
Especially with the return legs a week later, UEFA is in a tough spot. I don't know what UEFA could have done. I don't know. Just make sure the players are ready mentally. It's not the physical thing. Obviously, it's psychological that what the players are dealing with. And I get what Thomas Tuchel was saying. I mean, Tuchel, after the game, even ratcheted up his... the heat on UEFA. And the most telling quote that he gave after the game was, quote, minutes after the attacks, the only question was whether the game could go through or not. We were treated as if a beer can was thrown at the bus. It gives you a feeling of impotence, unquote. And I think that sums up where Dortmund as a club was coming from, how difficult this was going to be for them.
Yeah, I mean, the only problem with this is that what is the alternative? Okay, you're saying an extra day. Well, in many ways, they gave them an extra day in UEFA's mind. I'm not saying it's correct, but they gave them an extra
sure.
day. And then you push that back to Thursday.
You started infringing on the domestic.
Exactly.
Leagues.
You started infringing on the domestic.
Because both these teams play on the weekend.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, they're playing next week. It's not like a two-week break or something where you can say, okay, you know what, we'll just make it up next week. They have to get this game kind of out of the way, unless they just call it a nil-nil and then just play a second leg, which is kind of even more of a disadvantage to Dortmund in many ways because then they're only playing an away leg. It seemed like they were just told, okay, you're playing tomorrow instead. And I can understand, you know, psychologically, is one day really going to change that much in terms of how these players are affected? Probably not. They're still going to be traumatized, you know, another 24 hours later. And playing the game, you know, in many ways, when you have people who go through traumatic experiences, just getting out and playing a game oftentimes helps. And as much as we saw Dortmund struggle in that first half, it seemed like the second half, they kind of got back out of it and got back into a rhythm. So
to Dortmund's credit, they did come back. And they came back pretty strong. I mean, Tuchel made two subs, one of them Christian Pulisic. But, you know, as a group, it seemed like it took them a half. You know, the goalkeeper, Roman Burkle, wore Mark Bartra's shirt. It looked like he was wearing it backwards.
They do that sometimes, just for whatever reason, because they want the name to show up across their chest.
So obviously, it was still ever-present in their minds. I mean, this is not something you can just shrug off, even if you're going to play for 90 minutes.
This is just my reaction, but when we're talking about what was the right thing to do in terms of when to play the match, my honest opinion on that is screw that. I don't care. Because my initial reaction is this is a terrorist attack that was literally targeting a soccer team. And one day, despite the security measures that have been improved since the Germany Paris friendly that was a target of that of the Paris terrorist attacks, you're talking about playing a match one day after this happened. That's nowhere near enough time, as far as I'm concerned, to prepare for additional attacks. And you're talking about people's lives. I don't care at that point who wins the Champions League this year. But then I can also see it from the other side, where if you postpone this match and you make jumble up the fixtures and kind of convolute the schedule, whatever jumping jacks you have to do to try to reschedule the match, isn't it sort of like the attack wins? You know, doesn't it become like a certain
That's
extent
a good point.
Like
yeah,
because it even though it didn't, it only injured Mark Bartra, and again, we certainly hope he recovers as fast as possible. But you know, that as it stands right now, all it did was delay the match a day and knock out one of the defenders. It didn't kill anybody, thank God. It didn't, you know, cause some property damage and things like that. And if you get to a point where you're scrambling to find a way to change up the calendar and change up a lot of other things that could affect the Bundesliga schedule, could affect the league on schedule, then at that point, you're like, well, the attack did much more than just destroy a bus, basically, and send one player to the hospital. So it's like almost an impossible situation.
I'm kind of coming around to what Joey's saying, and I think that maybe the thing to do was that this goes on, that
right.
football goes on, and that this, I think obviously UEFA probably could have handled this better than texting Tuchel or whoever it was who got the text message from them, but they didn't let this stop the game, they didn't let this stop the tournament. And you have to applaud the Dortmund fans who put up Monaco fans.
Oh,
yeah.
Fantastic.
Which I think is one of the best.
That was probably
aspects.
The greatest thing that came out of this.
So it's one of the best parts of our game.
You know, the hashtag bet
for away fans.
Bet for away fans.
When they had the attacks I was referring to, too, in Paris real quick, the very next match, I believe, was a friendly between England and France. And the players were joined in a circle in the middle of the field before the match. Instead of, you know, one team's on one side, one team's on the other. The fans, I think, were allowed to intermingle in the stands. They played both anthems. And it was just, you know, those kind of scenes coming out of something like this. Kind of to your point is that's what I remember from that. And what I remember from this will definitely be all the pictures on Twitter and the hashtag that they used to get the Monaco fans to stay with the Dortmund fans and kind of come together in a time like this, even though your two teams are playing each other at the same time, you're all on the same team.
I started to think it's great that Monaco fans and Dortmund fans are getting along. But I was thinking, if Bayern, something happened between Bayern and Dortmund.
Oh, no. Do we want to go there?
No, more like if something happened between Leipzig and any
other
Bundesliga club. Well, thankfully these routines with no bad history between them.
Exactly. Well, I mean, soccer gets such a bad rap, right? Anytime any attention that's spent to a soccer fan, it's usually some type of hooliganism or something.
Right.
Those lines. So the game was played. Monaco, we got to see Kylian Mbappe show why he's being called the next Thierry Henry. You know, the first goal, it was kind of, he was offside. He hit it off his, you know, thigh. But the third goal was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, yeah. Sorry, Liverpool fans, but Socrates pulled a Steven Gerrard when he slipped at midfield. And Mbappe pounced on the loose ball, took it all the way in, one-on-one, and it was a great finish.
Yeah, that finish
top
was
corner.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Top thrower.
That guy's legit.
His movement is, you know, speaking strictly to the soccer match itself, now that we've moved on from the implications of what happened beforehand for Dortmund, you got to be on top of your game defending this Monaco attack, and Mbappe in particular. His movement is fantastic. He's got great ability. And when you're down a defender and you're kind of struggling, like I said earlier, behind the pace, that is just a recipe for disaster against a team like Monaco. And yes, I do think he was offside on that first goal. But the thing is, even if he was, the goal was in the flow of play in terms of the momentum and what Monaco was building in a really tough place to play. And I don't know if the atmosphere was maybe a little bit different based on what happened the day before, but it was a recipe for Monaco to kind of seize the match, and seize it they did. And they definitely gave themselves an advantage heading into the second leg.
Was there anything else about Monaco that impressed you guys?
I mean, the thing we have to keep in mind is that they score goals, but they also let goals in.
Yeah.
And we saw that in this game. I mean, Dortmund's not out of this by any means.
No.
Going to Monaco, I think that both teams will probably look to score a bunch of goals again. And like we said, you know, entering this tie, that first leg, even, you know, getting past all of the drama off the pitch, it delivered exactly what we were talking about. They scored goals. Both teams scored goals, and there will be more goals.
We're how many minutes in? You haven't brought up Christian Pulisic.
I mean, I want to spare everybody out there. I could talk about him every
really?
Minute of every podcast. But,
you don't
yeah.
spare us.
Well, I don't care about you guys. I care about the fans.
I mean, you have to give Monaco credit for being extremely clinical. They won with two shots on goal. So they took their chances, and they allowed Dortmund the possession. And it might have been a different ball game, obviously, if things hadn't gone down the way they had. But, you know, Monaco were very good. And I think Dortmund, to their credit, are definitely still in this. They fought their way back into it. I still think it's a pretty delicately poised tie when we get to the second leg next week.
Joe, I think I saw you tweet out that the game changed when Pulisic came in at halftime.
It did. It was crazy. You know, Pulisic was running that left side of Monaco ragged. I mean, there wasn't anybody on that side could stop him. Whether he was, you know, just cutting in, dribbling, or going wide and crossing.
Mm-hmm.
He could do whatever he wanted, and it was just creating havoc. Now, nothing came of that, and eventually it led to that first goal, because there was
right.
so much possession, so much just stuff that Monaco had to deal with, especially coming from Pulisic's side of the field. But the goal actually came from the left, from the opposite side. And Aubameyang had an awesome backheel that found Kagawa.
And that's why I think even though he didn't score or assist directly himself, it's kind of what I was talking about with Mbappe. The best teams in the world, some of whom we'll talk about later in this podcast, you know, the Bayerns, the Barcelonas, the Real Madrids, they're so dangerous because they have players like Pulisic. And, you know, I'm not saying necessarily he would be in the first choice 11 for those teams or anything.
Exactly,
but
what you're saying.
That's, yeah, you know, he should be. But having someone who's that dynamic on the wing, all of a sudden, you know, you talk about before the match how you want to line up tactically and how you want to position yourself. You got a center back who's got to be more mindful of that guy out there. Maybe that opens up channels in the middle. And that's the whole point of having a player like that. Is to have them wreak that havoc on the outside. So again, even though he didn't score, I think your point's well taken. The dynamic of the match changed, and he kind of gave a different level to Dortmund on the outside, and it did lead, or it did help at least, them score a couple goals. And he, you know, you also got to wonder, going back to what we were talking about earlier, Pulisic, no matter how well he plays or how poorly he plays, he always plays with energy. He always brings that dynamic threat, and he always, you know, he works as hard as he can. He's got a good work rate. And you just wonder if that didn't have an overwhelmingly positive effect on a team that, as we mentioned, was kind of slumping and had to pick its heads up after the first half.
The other big question, obviously, is Barcelona related. They're down 3-0.
3-0, is that all?
But I would say that this deficit is going to be even tougher to overcome, because the way Juventus plays defensively, I get that Barcelona is going back to the Camp Nou, and things are different there. And their stars, as we've seen, can come through playing before their home fans. But don't you think trying to overturn a 3-goal deficit against Juventus, even if you are playing at home, that's asking a bit much?
I think we have to take it in the context of what we just saw, which is Juve playing at home. And Juve is incredibly strong side at home. I believe it's 22 straight matches unbeaten in Europe for them. And then you look at Barcelona, who has not been a good side away. They've lost three of their last four away games in the Champions League. And then on top of that, on the weekend, if you watch, they lost to Malaga away as well, after playing some of the best football I've seen them play all season at home. So they are a completely different side away than they are at home. And as much as you want to count them out, and I counted them out last round.
I am not counting them out.
I'm just saying
this is different.
It is. But when you look at PSG, PSG was different too, because they're such a, I mean, you could look at PSG and Juve and say these two teams are just as strong as each other. But the difference is that you just don't know what you're going to get from Barcelona this season. And at home, it seems like they're good. They're really, really good. And if they can bottle that up again and show up again at home and do something somewhat like that and get the benefit of a couple calls, which, frankly, they kind of got hosed on a couple calls. And Buffon was incredible. So it's not like Barcelona got completely played off the park. Juve deserved to win. They did win. But Barca probably should have had a goal or two.
But that's the thing I forgot to bring up is it's one thing to come back against PSG, against Kevin Trapp, right? He was the goalkeeper for PSG, and that defense. Now you have to go up against Chiellini, Bonucci. You have to deal with what Juve has when they have the ball. You're kind of playing with fire with Barcelona, but still, I just feel like Juventus is a whole different challenge.
I don't see him coming back this time. I'll give some credit.
John's laughing at you. Famous last words.
I know. But listen,
I've said those words.
He has said them. And I'll give Shahan credit for singing Juve and Dybala's praises. It's like you're saying, Joe, they haven't given up three goals in the Champions League this season, let alone one game. So, they could go to the Camp Nou and Barca might score a couple. But in order to score four goals, They're gonna open up opportunities, and I think I just don't see lightning striking twice in this case.
Joey's got a big smile on his face.
Hey, I got a big smile on my face because this kind of played out exactly as I expected it to. Look, no one's counting Barcelona out. The same virtue that I talked about last pod about how we have recent evidence that Barcelona can get blown off the pitch in a Champions League match. We also have recent evidence that they can come back and overturn a dramatic deficit. So I'm not counting them out. I think what makes it different, in addition to the defense, instead of Juventus's defense, which we all agree is very tough and very good and very experienced and very difficult to break down, I'd like to look at Barcelona's defense. Yesterday, Sergio Busquets was sorely missed. He didn't provide that cover in front of the defense that they're used to having. The space that Dybala had on the two goals that he scored, you look at it and you say, well, he was in a very confined and tight area on the first goal where he turned and hit that left-footed shot into the corner. Then the second one was a really nice finish that maybe someone could have gotten out a little further to close down. But that's the thing. Once you get to this point, once you get to these kind of matchups, the margins are so incredibly fine that you have to have defenders that are going to be able to do that. Juventus does. And outside of Gerard Piqué, I mean, Jeremy Mathieu just did not belong yesterday in that lineup. Umtiti's still
that guy
young.
He was getting trashed on Twitter all game long.
Well, he did not. He was not the right man for the game.
Not at all.
And he, you know what? That wasn't something new. And also to see Mascherano in the midfield for Barcelona, that just doesn't happen.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a lot of weird stuff.
Well,
going
if Dybala
there.
Had so much space on the strikes, I mean, where was Mascherano?
Right. And well, Mascherano was the most obvious example was where he got worked by Chiellini for the third goal, where he was marking him on the back post, was he not? And Chiellini just kind of overpowered him and sent that header far post, and that kind of put the tie to bed right there. And that's what I'm saying. Like, the defense for Barcelona has always been, even in the days of Puyol and Piqué pairing in the middle, has always been a little flimsy. It's always kind of just been good enough to plug the dam behind the tide, so to speak, that is the great attackers that they have, the all-time great attackers that they have. But the second leg now, you look forward, and Neymar is not going to play due to yellow card accumulation. They're going to get Busquets back, which will definitely help them kind of wall off the midfield a little bit. But then you're going to have to break down this Juve team. And then if you're talking about having majority of the possession and having Juve not sporadically counter, I definitely think they'll be in the match and they'll take it a little bit to Barcelona at the new camp. I'm looking and I'm seeing Mandzukic just kind of been reinvented as this towering winger who's actually playing pretty well out there. You've got Pjanic, you've got Cuadrado, you've got creative players all over the place. Those are not the kind of guys I want thundering at a vulnerable back line, no matter where it is. I mean, even PSG found a way to nick a goal in, at the Nou Camp with Cavani, and it was a very nice goal, but I just, it's a different animal with Juventus. And I think that even though Barca, you can probably count on them to get a couple in this next match, I just, I don't think it's going to be enough.
That's the one thing, that the Neymar yellow card accumulation, I think, is something where that really, really hurts them, because a lot of what they do in terms of building their attack comes up from that side. And Neymar plays a massive role, even if he doesn't necessarily get the goals. And then you add in a little bit more into, they just don't really have the personnel to replace and like come in and even have half the impact that Neymar has. Now, the only thing working in their favor is that Neymar picked up a red card against Malaga. So at least on the weekend, they can practice playing without Neymar. they can enjoy it.
You just go on vacation, awesome. Neymar. We'll see you in a couple weeks there.
Well, I think right now he's scheduled to miss El Clasico too. So Barcelona is due to pretty much have their entire season combust over the next week and a half.
I mean, here's a legitimate question for you guys. Outside of Barcelona's front three, how many guys in the current starting 11 would get into this Juventus team, do you think?
I think Rakitic on his best day, I think would find his way in there. But that's a very valid question. The thing we're talking about, you're addressing, is the age of this Barcelona
and lack of depth.
Yeah. Mascherano's no spring chicken. Even Busquets, he can't, doesn't, just the season, it seems like he's lost a step, maybe. I don't know. But you're right. I mean, it's what we think of Barcelona being this dominant, talent-laden squad. It really is top-heavy with Suarez, Messi, and Neymar.
Yeah, but I think some of that does come down to the manager in the sense that, why do you not play Jordi Alba? They kind of handicapped themselves a little bit more than they even needed to. And the way that they did it, I'm not sure I entirely agreed with. Now, I understand the Busquets thing is massive because he plays such a central role to how you work the ball around. But I just looking at it, it's like you look at the bench and you're like, okay. And then he brings on Andre Gomes, who has not been good for them at all. That was one of the changes they made. It's like a lot.
He didn't learn from the PSG first leg.
Exactly. They made a lot of those same mistakes where you're sitting there going, what is Luis Enrique thinking? Is he gonna announce his retirement from Barcelona again after this leg to re-inspire his squad? Is that what they need?
A couple of years ago, you wrote a good piece, Shahan, about how this is the greatest attacking quadrant, if you want to call it that, Iniesta, Messi, Neymar, and Suarez, that the game has ever seen. And it's okay, if we all acknowledge that that's true, it's okay to not have a direct replacement, obviously, for any of those guys, because by definition, they don't have a direct replacement. But Barcelona's depth is so thin, and the drop-off is so great that, you know, you needed a Neymar to stay out of yellow card trouble. And this Barcelona team, at its best, we've seen it can be very dangerous. But they're again, going back to the margins are so fine now with it because of the age, because of the lack of depth, because of the tactics of the manager sometimes, that they play a very dangerous game. They were fortunate to get by PSG with that rally and a couple dubious penalty calls. They're not going to do it against Juventus, I don't think.
Paco Alcacer is the replacement for Neymar.
What we've talked about before on past podcasts, you know, the La Masia has not turned out, you know, any, you know, next big things in the most, you know, last couple of years, which is why they have to go out and try to buy some replacement.
Right, even the guys they're buying, like you say, Turan and
they didn't even bring him to the game.
Yeah, they haven't picked up a Suarez or a David Villa for some time now, Barcelona.
So La Liga doesn't have any problems with its other two representatives in the Champions League quarterfinals, the two Madrid teams, and we'll start with Real Madrid. We were split on who was going to come out of this tie, but we all agree that ultimately the champion would come from this tie. Let's start with Bayern's situation. You know, they had a man down. Javi Martinez had a
idiotic tackle
to pick up a second yellow. What do you guys assess Bayern's predicament right now? Is it, they gave up two away goals, and they're only down one, but how bad is it for Bayern?
I think it's bad. I don't think it's bad as it would be if you just took the brass tacks, the facts, so to speak, of what happened today, a 2-1 loss at home to Real Madrid, because Real Madrid's actually been pretty good on the road this season. And while they're certainly very, very good at home, it's not some impenetrable fortress. I think that there's definitely a chance that Bayern can overturn this. The problem is, with Lewandowski out, it changed the formation. You know, Vidal's used to playing against alongside Thiago Alcantara in front of the back four, and now he's pushed up into the number 10-ish role that Thomas Muller usually occupies at the top in the number 9 position today. And even with those two in there, they were still kind of reliant on the wings, and Robin and Ribery are a little bit older, and they're still effective, but they're not as lethal as they once were. And I said last week, I was like, I didn't think that it would be necessarily a good idea to go at this Bayern side, flat out attack them and leave yourself vulnerable going the other way. But they do have the talent to do that. They do have the players to do that. Casemiro was very big today. He was a good little barrier in front of the back four, played a nice ball that actually set up Carvajal for Ronaldo's first goal. And the fact that Lewandowski wasn't there and jumbled up the formation. And then beyond that, Javi Martinez did not have Mats Hummels, his regular defensive partner, back there. And I don't know if that excuses the two stupid yellow cards, but clearly there was something up with him, and maybe he was trying to do a little bit more than he's normally asked to do because of part of not having Hummels, and part of that is also facing, frankly, you know, one of the best attacking sides in the world. It was definitely a weird day for Bayern that you don't usually see from them, and it's kind of weird that it affected them that much in terms of style of play, because it could have been a lot worse. Real Madrid could have had 4 or 5 goals, and so if they get their full team back next week, it's certainly not over. I think we all have faith in them, but man, Real Madrid did a number on them.
So I was looking at the match kit, and I saw something really interesting. So Bayern's made the semifinals 5 straight seasons, but they've been eliminated by Spanish opposition for the past 3 seasons. So this would be 4 years in a row, if they get knocked out, that they go out to a Spanish side. I don't know what's going on over there, but it seems as if Real, Barcelona, Atleti, those teams seem to have Bayern's number. And whatever, and it goes back to basically since Bayern won the Champions League. And since then, it's just been Spanish sides beating them up over and over again. From Real's side, you know, I think we forget, or we haven't mentioned yet, but Arturo Vidal had the opportunity. Granted, it was a bogus penalty that looked like it hit the shoulder and should not have been a handball.
Yeah.
But he had the opportunity to go up and make this, you know, add that second goal for Bayern, which would have been huge. But he didn't do that. He blasted it well over. And I mean, you guys were sitting in the office. Before he blasted it, I was like, wait, Arturo Vidal's taking this? And I yelled, this is going to get blasted. And it went straight over, like right then. It just popped up.
Fully airmailed.
It was the easiest thing to see. Because first of all, he raises his hand up as if he's kicking a field goal. And then he proceeded to kick a field goal. Sorry. It was awful. But you kind of felt like there were certain things going on where Neuer was getting called into action way too much. He had a couple saves that, frankly, Real should have had 3 goals today. They could have had more. Bayern just did not have it from front to back. And I think some of it you look at, and I was trying to figure it out. I was like, why is Ribery playing? He hasn't really been playing that much or been looking that good. And you have Kingsley Coman, and you have Douglas Costa. Douglas Costa, frankly, should have been starting from the start. Now you're down Lewandowski on top of that?
Yeah.
Why would you... And Thomas Muller...
Well, Ribery was great on the weekend, though, against Dortmund.
Yeah, but I think consistently, in terms of how he's been... He's only recently come back. And when he's come back, he's slowly been phased in. I don't think that this was the type of... When you have a guy like Douglas Costa, who's been a regular for you and produced for you, I think Ribery coming in as a substitute role makes much more sense. Plus, when a guy like Lewandowski's out, I think you... Like, Muller hasn't been great this year at all, and that's being very generous.
He hasn't. Yeah,
he's been pretty bad, and he's not been able to really score right now.
He's only scored a handful of goals in Bundesliga.
I think in that situation, I would be more prone to actually pushing Arjen Robben more as a forward, and then actually using a guy like... You have so many wings to add as attacking talent. Robin's played as a forward. We've seen it with Netherlands many, many times. You can do that and more than get away with it and get goals and really create problems. But they decided to go with Muller. It didn't work out because they didn't really get any goals from there. It was Arturo Vidal's header. So, yes, in certain ways, you can't completely fault him for, you know, missing the penalty because he did attack a ball and hit a bullet header off a corner. But I thought there were a few mistakes made here and there, and I honestly would have liked to see them not like try and go with the pace of either Coman or Douglas Costa rather than trying to go with the you know, Ribery-Robin combo, which was probably at its best about 5 years ago.
It's funny, for a team with as much attacking talent as Bayern has, when you get past Lewandowski, they don't have a lot of depth in terms of an out-and-out number nine striker. And Müller has been a very effective goal scorer in his career, but as kind of a false nine, as a withdrawn sort of guy running these odd, bizarre channels and scoring weird goals. He doesn't score the kind of goals Lewandowski. He's not a number nine out-and-out.
He's not a stout guy to with the hold-up play either.
Yeah, he's not good for that.
He's a movement guy. Right.
And without that sort of central focal point for these guys, Robin and Ribery, to make runs off of, they were a little bit directionless in the attack. So, they really do need Lewandowski. But you look at him coming back on the second leg and you say, yeah, they're definitely still in this tie. But it wasn't very long ago we were all talking about Real Madrid as the favorites to win this. And that was kind of by default.
Not all of us.
Well, okay, but I know Joe and I had mentioned it, and we've seen a couple contenders kind of rise and kind of fall, and Real Madrid are, again, looking like the team to beat.
Do you guys think Real Madrid should get partial credit for the result?
Absolutely.
The card changed things.
Sure. That's what I was saying. Like, I don't want to take credit away. I think the big storyline overall was who wasn't there for Bayern Munich and how it kind of changed things for a little bit. And I agree with Shahan, like the tactics, the lineup just got bungled like crazy. And I understand Ancelotti, maybe he thinks he's going to have Lewandowski back next week. And he thinks that, okay, we don't want to necessarily shift to something different where we've got Thomas Müller playing up top next to Robin or something, you know, whatever it may be. We want to keep kind of the same formation, the 4-2-3-1 that we usually play, so we don't get out of that. But, all that said, Ronaldo had gone through his longest Champions League scoring slump of his career for 6 matches. And he finally gets off the schneid and he scores 2 goals. And it's not like he was ineffective. I think he had 6 assists in those 6 matches. But, you know, he makes some clever runs and he gets on the end of balls that were played in. And Real Madrid, again, like the Sergio Ramos and Casemiro were impenetrable in the second half. And when you're Bayern Munich, you want to try to kind of pull apart that formation with your attacking talent. But because Robin and Ribery were so relatively ineffective in that regard, they kind of got to stay there and do what they do best. And then once Bayern went down to 10 men, they're basically reduced to playing long balls forward when they had nobody who could hold up play like that. And they dealt with every one of those balls, the Madrid back line, expertly. And from that point, you know, you ask them to do the job and go get the points. They did exactly what they needed to do to go in there. The 2 goals, away goals, heading back to the Bernabeu for the second leg. And I think that they were very impressive today. And sometimes, even if you're not necessarily firing on all cylinders, which I don't think Real Madrid was, you got to get those results if you're going to win the Champions League. And they did that today.
Yeah, I'll just reiterate that we really should give more credit to Ronaldo. And he was good. He scored goals. He popped up when he needed to. And he came up in the big moments.
His run on the second goal, I thought, was absolutely brilliant because the ball wasn't great from Asensio, but he kind of ducked back to make the defenders think that he was going to maybe try to play a square pass or have him play a square pass. And then he kind of pushed forward, and he was running forward just as the last line defender for Bayern Munich was coming back. So he was, you know, by himself, and the finish wasn't the cleanest in the world, but he got the foot to it, and he beat Neuer, which is very tough to do. And sometimes if you're facing a great keeper like Neuer, it takes an awkward finish like that to beat them as opposed to like a wonder strike, which they're more adept at saving. So I thought he was brilliant today. I agree.
Yeah, and that save with Neuer, that was on Ronaldo too. That should have been a goal. We would be talking about it.
You said anyone else's arm would have been broken by
him. Yeah, I think you break a wrist.
It was almost
and Neuer like hit it with force. It was actually
Almost dismissive. Neuer was like, "Get this out of here."
Yeah, it was honestly one of the more impressive saves because it was, you know, Ronaldo found a little bit space and we're talking from the penalty spot and blasted one.
Yeah.
And Neuer's like, "I got no problem with this. It's to the right. It's not right at the goalkeeper." It was probably the most impressive save of the day. And then even after all of that, there was a ball to the back post where Ronaldo slipped. But before he slipped, we were all going, "Oh, there's number three," because he was in those positions today. He played really, really well. And for as much as we keep talking about him slowing down or possibly not being the player he is in terms of how he used to run at players and just run by players, he scores goals. He's still doing his job. And you cannot take that away from him at all. And today was a prime example that this guy is a long way from being done.
It was a good day for the other Madrid team, Atletico Madrid. 1-1 nothing, and got a penalty from, Antoine Griezmann won it I mean, you saw the play. It looked like it was outside.
It was not a penalty. That should not have been called a penalty. Mark Albrighton was stuck in a really, really tough spot in the sense that the Griezmann was pretty much by him and about to get into the box. And Albrighton made a decision where he was going to foul him right outside the box, which we've seen players do a million times. And the referee thought that he was inside the box. I mean, it was a tough play because of how quick Griezmann is. But the foul did occur on the edge right outside the box. It should not have been a penalty. That said, Griezmann stepped up and scored a goal. When you look at this game, and you know, I did the match report on it. It was first half, 64% possession to 34% possession, Atletico Madrid. Second half, exact same possession. The first half, Atletico had 11 shots. They actually hit the woodwork. Second half, it seemed like Leicester got a little bit better. And Leicester held them to no shots on goal in the second half. They survived. I mean, Leicester, if you told Leicester City that they would go to Atletico Madrid, the Vicente Calderon, where Atleti has won 29 in their last 35 European ties. That's 29 wins, not unbeaten. And you escaped with a 1-0 to go back home to the King Power?
That's a victory for Leicester.
That is awesome.
Yeah,
and it's a moral victory.
This is best scenario for Leicester City.
Yeah,
best scenario was to not be too many goals down.
Yeah.
They weren't going to get a draw.
And
they might have if it hadn't been for that call.
They didn't have Wes Morgan, their captain and their central defender. I mean, we're talking about a makeshift defense going away to Spain in the quarterfinals of the Champions League and escaping with only giving up one goal. Like, geez, hats off to you.
Yeah, you got to give credit to Robert Huth. Had an outstanding game.
Who?
Robert Huth, the man.
Shahan's client.
I think he's
Shahan's his agent or something.
Pay the man. Now we have to rehash Shahan's column. The missing link.
Well, he was a catalyst.
He was the awesome bass player of Leicester's title.
Not exactly, but in many ways. Because what ended up happening is when he joined the team in January of, two seasons ago, they were dead last and heading down. They looked like a relegation team. Like, they were the Sunderland of that season. And since he joined, their defense got shored up. They survived and did the improbable, incredible, miraculous save. And then they actually brought in new players, new manager, everything else. And that defense stayed true because it seemed like Huth kind of had an impact in terms of they were Premier League defense from being previously not a Premier League defense.
When you pitched that idea to me, I still think of Robert Huth as this awkward 20-year-old or whatever he was on Chelsea who could not move. He was a statue. But every time they threw him on, I'm like, I'm just waiting for the other team to score. It was kind of when Branislav Ivanovic would play center back. Ivanovic was decent, competent as a right back. But you put him in the center of central defense and like, and that was Robert Huth. Was like
the Gabriel of his day.
Gabriel.
Wow.
But that said, Leicester is in a great position, just like their round of 16 tie. And Gigi Buffon, he wasn't kidding around when he said, "Look, no, he doesn't want to face Leicester. This is the nightmare. You're only up 1-0. You're going to the King Power Stadium where anything can happen. It'd be idiotic for anyone to rule them out."
Although Robert Huth is suspended for the second leg.
Okay, they're done.
Well, if Morgan comes back, maybe they're not done.
I think Wes Morgan actually is more important to the team this year in terms of just how he's played and in their recent resurgence. So I thought this result was actually incredibly impressive for them to do. I think I read that he traveled with the team and gave them like a pregame speech and everything because he's the captain of the club. And it speaks volume that they were able to, because they were on the back foot for most of that game.
Mm-hmm.
And they were still able to keep Atletico out, save for one dubious penalty.
And that's where before the game, I even tweeted this out. I was like, you know what the cold reality that crushes the dreams of Cinderella is? It's not having Wes Morgan with Antoine Griezmann leading the other line. And lo and behold, Leicester goes and gets a decent result. Yes, they're down one goal, but, and maybe it would have helped to score the away goal. But like you guys said, heading home to King Power where they play better is good for them. I still have a problem because Atletico has gone to Barcelona and knocked out Bayern last year in their arena. They've gotten those big Champions League results. And I look at that, and I'm looking at New Camp, Allianz Arena. You're telling me they can't get a result at the King Power Stadium against the, 12th place team in the Premier League?
No one's telling you that. We're just saying they have a chance.
I don't have the dramatic bone in my body like you guys do. I'm sorry. I still think they're gonna lose this tie, and I think Atleti's going to show well next week.
I mean, you would bet on that. That's the safe money. But I do think at a certain point you could see Simeone doing what he does and sort of saying, okay, this is the result, 1-0, we're going to roll up shop now. And I think that was a dangerous move in this place.
It could be.
They needed to push for that second goal.
Especially with as he was praising Vardy before the match. I don't know if that's necessarily a chance you want to take.
Before we get out of here, should we just recap or summarize our thoughts for these four,
sure.
four ties? So Monaco, Dortmund gets... still to be determined, right?
But
but if you had a gun to your head, what do you say?
I would say I think Monaco's going to go through.
Alex?
Monaco.
Sam?
I'm going to go with Dortmund.
Nice.
All right.
Yeah, you're right. You know what? Pulisic? Yeah.
That's definitely Pulisic.
Yeah.
All right. Barca down 3-0, going home against Juve.
Barca's toast. They win 2-1 next week, but Juve goes on.
Yeah, Juventus all the way.
I should have never wavered. Yeah, Juve back on.
I'm going with Barcelona.
Whoa! All right.
Contrarian.
I like it.
All right.
Hey, it could happen.
Bayern, Real, going back to the Bernabeu.
I think Bayern shows well. I think it's a lot closer than we think it will be. I think it might be 2-1 Bayern late, but then I think Ronaldo or one of those fantastic Madrid attackers scores, and Madrid goes through closer than the experts think, to borrow Lee Corso's line.
Bayern.
I'll go Bayern as well, but I'm not Bayern. I'll say Real Madrid as well, but I will say that if Bayern does go out, which I think they will, I'm going to propel Juve to be the favorite to win it all.
I'm sticking with Real Madrid. That's no surprise here. Last but not least, Atletico going to the King Power Stadium. Cling to a 1-0 lead over Leicester.
I should go last on this, but Atletico, comfortably. Sorry.
You know, I love the Leicester City dream as much as anybody, but I'm going to go Atletico.
I've been to the King Power. It's a great place, but Atletico's a much, much better team. So, Joe,
clean sweep. Yeah, no, Leicester. I'm going Leicester all the way.
Wow.
You are. Interesting.
Now, I'm not putting any money on these picks, and neither should any of you who are listening. Hey, you can tweet me. I'll give you daily fantasy advice, but do not wager on any of these matches, these match predictions. Look.
Indeed.
Thanks, guys. Please be sure to subscribe to the podcast and give a review.
Yeah, review on iTunes if possible. It helps more people find us. So
this has been the FCI Soccer Podcast. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks. Bye.